This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Peter Sprigg with us on the show. Peter is Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at the Family Research Council, or FRC, in Washington, D.C. His research and writing focuses on the issues of marriage and family, as well as human sexuality and religion in public life. Peter is the author of the book, Outrage: How Gay Activists and Liberal Judges Are Trashing Democracy to Redefine Marriage. Peter is also the author of a new FRC policy paper entitled Marriage on Trial: State Laws Defining Marriage as the Union of One Man and One Woman Are Valid Under the Constitution of the United States. We're going to be talking with Peter today about some of the important questions he answers in this paper. And before we begin, I want to take a moment to really encourage our listeners to tune in to the show today, because what Peter has to share with us is extremely critical to our understanding of the battle that is raging over the institution of marriage, not only in our court, but also in the court of public opinion. Peter, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure. Peter, it seems like every time we turn around lately, we hear about another federal court striking down marriage laws and even voter-approved constitutional marriage amendments. The most recent was in Texas at the end of February. How concerned should we be as Christians and believers in the God-ordained institution of marriage about how our courts are being used to force the redefinition of marriage on the American public?
Well, we should be very concerned, and on a number of different levels, not just because this is seeking to impose a definition of marriage that is contrary to the Judeo-Christian tradition, but because of the way that they're going about it and the implications for society. If we were to change the definition of marriage, if we were to decide we want to just expand the borders of who can be considered a married couple in our country, which I think is a bad idea and would have negative consequences, but if we were to do that, that should be done through the democratic process. And there are a handful of states where they have done it through the democratic process. Now, we lobbied against that, but we're willing to accept the decision made by the voters or their elected officials in those states for the time being, at least, unless we can get a federal marriage amendment. But for them to go to court and try to have this imposed by the courts is dangerous, not just to the institution of marriage or to the Christian faith, but it's dangerous to our system of government itself. Because this is not the way that decisions are supposed to be made, where a liberal elite decides that they want to overturn a long-standing social consensus, and so they essentially pretend that it's a constitutional right, when it's clear there's nothing in the Constitution of the United States that would grant the right of a person to marry a person of the same sex.
And speaking of the courts, it seems quite likely that in the near future, the U.S. Supreme Court will be forced to confront the definition of marriage head on and determine whether or not they believe the current court considers marriage as, quote, only the union of one man and one woman to be constitutional. To date, Peter, what has the Supreme Court said about the definition of marriage?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of people don't realize that there is actually a binding Supreme Court precedent on the issue of states defining marriage as the union of one man and one woman. Now, the reason it's not known very well is because this is a case that where the Supreme Court issued its decision in 1972, over 40 years ago. This radical agenda has actually been pushed for that long. There was a male couple that tried to marry in Minnesota, and they were turned down and took this case to court. And the Minnesota Supreme Court did issue a written decision laying out in terms very similar to terms that pro-family attorneys are laying out today, why marriage is defined as the union of a man and a woman, And they appealed that case to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the U.S. Supreme Court dismissed the case, quote, for want of a substantial federal question, meaning that now that's different from refusing to take the case or hear the case. A dismissal for want of a substantial federal question is considered a binding precedent on the issues presented in the case. Basically, they said this is such an absurd claim that it's really not worth us taking the time to hear it, but we just want to establish that this is not a right, and so we're going to declare that there is no substantial federal question here. Now, a lot of people argue that given that they didn't actually hear the case, given that they didn't issue a written opinion, that they're probably not going to feel bound by that. But technically, under the rules of precedent, that remains the current binding precedent of the U.S. Supreme Court. As far as more recent cases, they had the opportunity and indeed were asked by the attorneys who were challenging California's Proposition 8, the California Marriage Amendment, last year. They were asked to declare that the federal constitution guarantees a right to same-sex marriage in the states, and they refused. Now, they did not declare that the states had the right to have such a definition. What they did is sort of punt that question on a procedural issue. The state officials in California had refused to defend Proposition 8, and so they said that the proponents who had defended it in court at the lower levels actually did not have standing to appeal the decision of the district court judge. So they said, we're not going to issue a decision on the merits. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision on the merits, we're vacating that. That's just wiped off the books, basically. They allowed the district court decision to stand, but that provides no binding precedent anywhere other than that district. Now, the third area where some people think that they Supreme Court has created precedent for overturning state definitions of marriage is in their decision last year where they struck down the federal definition of marriage as a one-man, one-woman union in the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. But in that case, if you actually read it closely, the bulk of that decision is based on arguments regarding federalism and the fact that DOMA, the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, was a deviation from the historical tradition of the federal government deferring to state definitions of marriage. And that was what they found was offensive about DOMA. So that same principle of the federal government deferring to state definitions of marriage would argue in favor of them upholding state definitions of marriage in states that define it as the union of a man and a woman, as well as in the states that have redefined it to include same-sex couples. So all these people who say that, you know, it's, you know, the handwriting is on the wall and it's obvious that the Supreme Court is going to strike down the marriage laws, I don't agree. I mean, I'm not a betting man. I'm not going to put money on it. It's possible that they could do that. But I think they've learned their lesson from the Roe v. Wade. I don't think they want a Roe v. Wade of same-sex marriage where they presume to settle a controversial social question with one Supreme Court decision. That was a failure in Roe v. Wade, and it would fail with respect to marriage. And I think they're doing everything they can to avoid that, actually.
Well, in your paper, you discuss the standard of review that courts should use in cases involving sexual orientation. First, if you would, explain for us what you mean by standard of review, and what are the four points that you outline that courts should consider when these cases come before them?
Well, as you said, the homosexual activists claim that they are being discriminated against because of their sexual orientation. Now, there's no question that the marriage law creates a classification of sorts. And the Constitution, when it says that we have to have the equal protection of the laws, that doesn't mean that every person has to be treated equally in every single thing that government does. It doesn't mean, for example, that you have to give veterans benefits to people who never served in the military. It doesn't mean that you have to give food stamps to people who are wealthy. Okay, so we create classifications in the law all the time. If those classifications are challenged, then there are certain ways that the courts will evaluate them. In this case, the classification is not between homosexuals and heterosexuals as individuals, but there is a classification of different couples that opposite-sex couples are permitted to marry and same-sex couples are not permitted to marry. So in evaluating whether that's justified, the courts ask two things. First, they ask whether there's an infringement upon a fundamental right. In the 14th Amendment, both the Fifth Amendment and the 14th Amendment talk about no person being deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. That term liberty is not further defined. A lot of people believe in the founding era, it referred just to physical liberty, the freedom to move around as opposed to being imprisoned, the freedom to walk freely and go travel where you want. But the courts have interpreted that more broadly in terms of freedoms to do different things and rights to engage in different activities. And they have declared that there's a fundamental right to marriage. But, again, the question is, what's the definition of marriage? Now, to identify a new fundamental right, the courts have said you have to first define precisely the right being insisted upon. And in this case, it's the right to marry a person of the same sex. And then you ask yourself, is this a right that is deeply rooted in this nation's history, legal traditions, and practices? Obviously, the right to marry a person of the same sex is not deeply rooted in this nation's history, legal traditions, and practices. So there's no fundamental right to same-sex marriage. But with respect to the argument about discrimination and so forth, most classifications are subject only to rational basis review. In other words, the law will be upheld, the statute will be upheld as constitutional, unless it can be shown that there is no conceivable rational basis for it. It doesn't have to be a persuasive rationale. It just has to be a conceivable rationale. Now, there are other categories where there's a higher standard of review, either heightened review or heightened scrutiny or strict scrutiny. A characteristic like race is subject to strict scrutiny. Almost no classification based on race will ever be upheld. Or a category like sex is subject to heightened scrutiny. It's not quite at the level of race, but it's higher than just sort of any general classification. There is no Supreme Court precedent declaring that classifications based on sexual orientation, even if you treat this as one, are subject to anything but a rational basis test. To be subjected to higher than that, they would have to demonstrate a long history of discrimination. It would have to be a characteristic that has nothing to do with their ability to perform or contribute to society. It's usually an immutable characteristic, and it usually involves a class of people who are politically powerless. Now, there's been a long history of disapproval of homosexual conduct. That's not the same as discrimination against a class of people because of who they are. Certainly, homosexuals are able to contribute to society in a variety of ways. The question is whether same-sex couples can contribute to the public purposes of marriage, chief among them natural procreation and providing a mother and father to the children raised by that couple. Obviously, they can't do those particular things. In the question of immutability, homosexual conduct can clearly be changed at will, even if same-sex attractions are more difficult to change. And the category of political powerlessness, you almost have to laugh because it's clear that homosexuals today in 2014 have a political power that is far greater, disproportionately great, compared to their size of their population.
Well, Peter, you have been extremely generous with your time, but unfortunately we are out of time for this show. Where can our listeners go to get a copy of FRC's publication, Marriage on Trial?
Well, you can find it on our website at frc.org, and I think it is featured right now on the homepage. So look for it at frc.org.
Peter Sprigg, I want to thank you so much for being back with us on Family Policy Matters and for the great work that you do and that the Family Research Council does on our behalf. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.